You're listening to Irish Radio Canada at Home and Abroad, and we're in the month of March. And for anybody who is not living in Ireland, being Irish outside of Ireland is a very, very special thing. And in Canada, the month of March has been designated Irish Heritage Month. And that is as a result of the long history that exists between the two countries and the path, migration path, that's going back to the 1600s. Melanie McComb holds a BS from the State University of New York at Oswego, and she's an international lecturer who teaches on a variety of topics, including colonial throughout the 20th century American military research, genetic genealogy, Atlantic Canadian, African American, Jewish, and Irish genealogy. She's also an honorary fellow of the Massachusetts Historical Society, and she has had articles published in the American Ancestors magazine and 50 Plus Advocate, and she is a blogger known as the Shamrock Genealogist. And using published and online primary sources, Melanie uncovers the story of the migration of the Irish to Canada before and during the Great Famine. And Melanie delivered a webinar reviewing the different immigration schemes, including the Peter Robinson settlers to Ontario, the Monaghan settlers to Atlantic Canada, and the assisted immigration to Quebec, drawing on records about their departure from Ireland and the arrival into Canada, including the quarantine stations at Partridge Island and Gros Isle. Melanie, thank you so much for coming along.
Thank you for inviting me, Austin. My pleasure.
Particularly the month of March, and so many people proud of their Irish heritage. What got you interested in this?
Sure. So my father's family is of Irish heritage. My maternal father's line comes from County Monaghan, Ireland, and settled into Prince Edward Island, Canada. So we have that Canada connection as well. And my paternal grandmother's family came directly from Ireland to New York, and they came from County Louth. So I really was just interested in learning more about my family, starting with my paternal grandmother, and also just going back on my maiden name, the Doherty line, because no one really knew where they came from. So I wanted to figure that out, and I was able to figure that out and take it back a few generations, more beyond than what the family had already traced.
And that was Doherty from Donegal, was it?
Nope, that was from Monaghan, actually.
Okay.
So yeah. Maybe way back they were in Donegal, but yeah, I traced them all the way back to the Tadumnet Parish in Monaghan.
Right, because... And again, it's interesting that so many family names are located in certain parts of Ireland and pockets. And Doherty, while it might be, it's up in the northwest in that general direction. But that, and you know, a lot of people do not take an interest in genealogy until they get a little bit older. There's a stage in our life where we're more concerned with the present than the past. So. For you to decide to go down this route, obviously the Irishness in the family was something that was very strong, very prominent.
Yes, absolutely. There was a lot of family lore being told about what my grandmother thought about her husband's family. She called them a bunch of horse thieves in Ireland. You know that whole thing here. And there was even Corcoran days. They had like family reunions on that side. That was my paternal grandmother's line. So they all stayed in touch with a lot of the cousins, and a lot of them even went back to Ireland to visit the cemeteries and the churches and the cousins that are living over there. So we definitely had a very strong connection with diaspora. So.
So, Melanie, you start tracing and you go back into the late 1600s, where some Ulster Scots emigration to Eastern Canada settlements. When you decided to get into this and start doing your research, were you surprised yourself at how long the relationship is, how early the relationship is?
A little bit, yes. I thought that maybe it would only be a generation or so actually staying in Canada, but I had family that stayed in Canada for, you know, several generations before I really even get to the immigrant coming to the United States. My earliest immigrant coming to the United States on the Doherty line was Francis Doherty, and he came over pretty much in the late 1800s, right after his son went to Kansas to homestead. So he actually went there to live out the rest of his life. But, I mean, for the most part, I had people coming into to Canada early 1820s, 1830s, I would say, which, you know, is pre-famine. And that was, I thought, really interesting to note that, because I thought all of my lines would have been famine, and it was really only one line was famine-related, and that was my Rooney line that came from Fermana, and they came on one of the coffin ships into Charlottetown, Prince Edward Island.
And as you say, there's a lot of people, and they do see that the immigration appears to start at the famine, but we know that there was fishing going on between Wexford, Waterford, Waterford particularly in Newfoundland back in the 1700s.
Yes.
And then also in the early 1800s, the canals were all being built, be it the Erie Canal, the Lachine in Montreal, the Rideau Canal, the Trent Severn. And this was in the early 1800s. So while the famine in effect was a pivotal point and people talk about it, this year we're celebrating the 200th anniversary of the Peter Robinson migration. Again, that was pre-famine.
Correct. Yes, that was in the period 1825 to 1828, in which poor families from Ireland were being settled in Ontario. And that was occurring over several different routes of ships. This was an assisted immigration scheme that was being set up to resettle the poor, mostly from like places like County Cork and other parts of Southern Ireland.
And I'll try not to bounce around too much, but you talk about the Halifax settlement in 1749. Why is that so pivotal, or why would you put that down as a date?
I found that as pivotal because that was really the first established settlement by the British of the Irish in Canada. So besides the Irish coming to Canada to fish, like you mentioned, off of Newfoundland and other locations, this was really the first time when the British were actually importing in different families, and that included about 66 Irish families and their servants into this military settlement. They largely were trying to build up this fort in response to a possible attack from France's Louisbourg fortress. So this was very much trying to have enough people and manpower to be able to put it in. And I thought it was just really interesting because, unlike other immigration schemes, they provided more for them. They gave them free transportation. They provided them with provisions during and even up to 1 year after they arrived. They provided tools and utensils needed, and they gave them, you know, land free and clear from taxes and any rent. So I thought that was really setting up for additional schemes, because that really was setting up for what we see with the Peter Robinson settlers, where they basically mirrored that, and they just changed how they were allocated land as part of that. So it really was almost like a test drive in a way to see, okay, this could happen, we could actually accomplish this.
Now, it also, but before Peter Robinson, of course, there was a large settlement after the Napoleonic Wars. And I think that would have been after the 1812. This was to Canada primarily, because after 1812, there was a concern about maintaining the border between the US and Canada. And settlements were put along what would have been close to, in particularly in Ontario, I think, were places to protect Canada, or what was Canada at the time, or the lower Canada, that would have been Upper Canada.
Right. Yes, and it isn't until the Napoleonic Wars are over with in 1815 where we really start to see the more of the migration into more of the Atlantic colonies that we see. So places like Prince Edward Island and New Brunswick and Nova Scotia, where they really start to open up more, and also Ontario later on.
Now, the assisted scheme to Peter Robinson, 1825 to 1828, and that was primarily where the families were being brought to Ontario. And as I say, we are celebrating 200 years this year, and I know there will be events held in Ireland in August, and there will be in Ontario and Peterborough, and Peterborough being called after Peter Robinson, and that is in September. That was significant for so many reasons. What would you see as the primary on those?
I mean, for primary reasons, it really was a way to give the the poor Irish Catholics of the of Southern Ireland a chance to start over, essentially. There actually was an application process where you had to apply to be part of this scheme. There was two different sailing waves in 1823 and 1825, and they went through, in the first scheme, over 50,000 applicants. So you really, so it really was an accomplishment. If you got picked to actually go, you were able to start over and have a bit more of a starting point of in this new land and be able to get land, which would have been something very key, especially knowing how the penal laws were set up in Ireland, where they were not able to own land. So this was definitely giving that opportunity to start over in farming and other trades as well.
And likewise, this is pre-famine. So,
pre-famine, yep.
And again, the efforts were being made, as I understand it, around that time, where the landlords were endeavoring to some degree to clear the land of what would have been small holdings.
Yes. Yeah. A lot of times, a lot of the landlords would try to liquidate their estates and basically evict their landlords as a way of, it was actually far cheaper for them to send them on boats to Canada than to try to keep them on their lands, especially if they found that some of their more poor tenants weren't able to pay their rent. So they found that there was less issues with basically having to just essentially evict everybody. And that's what started happening, is we started seeing a lot more evictions. And as the famine really ramped up, we started seeing more of that happening. And also, even during this time, though, even though we think of the famine as really in the 1840s, there were actually a number of different famines that were occurring, especially in the south of Ireland, where they were just getting hit the hardest in different places like Cork and Wexford, where they had famines for, you know, over many different decades, even most recently. Recently, as in the 1820s, right before the Peter Robinson settlers, there was a number of famines that were occurring. So there was definitely a lot of pain that was being felt early on, which I think would explain why there was this urgency to get out even before the Great Famine hit.
Now, you mentioned that one of the things that attracted you to do some research was your heritage along the Doherty line, and that was the Monaghan settlers.
Yes.
That was 1830, 1850 to PEI. What was the stimulation there, or what drew the Monaghan settlers to PEI?
Yeah, so with this one was more driven by a congregation being moved to Prince Edward Island, where they basically were seeing that they had saw their earlier precursors, the Scots, actually being brought over by Father MacDonald into Prince Edward Island, being successfully being brought in. They were Catholic as well. They were settling in different towns, and they were able to live out their lives as Catholics and being able to farm with very similar agricultural to what they had. And that's really what inspired Reverend Patrick Moynagh, who was the parish priest, for example, in Donegh and Monaghan, where he also then encouraged and assisted his congregation to then settle into Prince Edward Island. So a lot of these communities were not having financial issues. Many of them actually had a decent amount of wealth in County Monaghan, enough that they could actually go to Prince Edward Island, check out the land they wanted, go back and basically pack and come back again another time later. So this was not an assisted immigration where they needed the government involved. This was more private through the church.
And parallel to that, Montreal Immigrant Society, they were bringing immigrants in to Quebec and Ontario. Were they targeting any particular areas in Ireland, or were just random?
My understanding is it was very similar to just targeting poor immigrants. So they were really looking at, I don't think there was any particular parts that I was able to find exactly where they were from. But I think that a lot of them were coming from a lot of the same similar parts, you know, like places like probably like Cork and Tipperary and other places as well. So it was a bit of a mixture. But in general, they were looking for those that wanted to come to Quebec and either settle there or move on to Upper Canada to Ontario at the time. So yeah, it was a lot more mixed than the Peter Robinson we found.
And likewise, around that time, there was the Fitzwilliam migration. And I know Fitzwilliam owned, he had shares in the railway company at the time, and he was looking at it. He could clear the land in Culloden and at the same time provide workers to help build the rail. So there was the large migration happening parallel from the County Wicklow around that time, and that was up what now is the up the Ottawa Valley in around Smiths Falls, Perth area. So I guess these schemes were being operated by a number of landlords. And because then when we get into the famine, we have Mahon in Strokestown clearing the land and shipping people to Quebec also.
Yes, and that was one of the more famous ones with the landlord out in Roscommon when they had evicted everybody. And he was not a very well-liked landlord, and I believe he was even assassinated, actually, shortly after that time when he removed all, we're talking about thousands of people were removed from his estates.
Now, what's also fascinating in all of this is when you look at all that time period and the impact that has had, well, on Canada, on North America, but likewise on Australia. But when you see the Irish names that now permeate North America, and they would have all, in a way, originated during this time period that we're talking about.
Yes, so we definitely do see the presence of all the different, the Irish community showing up, so much so that a lot of places in Canada you will find are actually named after places in Ireland. Very common to see that. I see that all over places in like Prince Edward Island and other and some of the other provinces where they literally just mirror the exact same town name, and that's why you see this twinning that's occurring, and there are commemoration festivities happening year over year. For example, in Prince Edward Island, I know that they, for example, they look at people from the parish of Tadumnet twin with the Fort Augustus township, which is where a lot of them settled and around those areas. So, and they have these Ireland days and other heritage days as part of that. So very much honoring their Irish heritage, even though, you know, a lot of them eventually did become Canadian citizens later on when the law was changed in the 20th century to actually embrace them as Canadian versus Irish.
Yeah, I am just out the road from where I live is Navan, and the way into Navan is Long Trim Road. And last year when we were up in near Lake Huron, I never managed to get from Carlow to Belfast as fast, and then to Listowel. it was an amazing journey. that all these, as you say, all these town names, they crop up, and they're reflective of the relationship. Now, while I know your research is looking at and the work you've done is predominantly up to that period of time, but since then, of course, there have been waves of Irish, and they do tend to come in waves, in that I know in the 50s there was wave, and in the 70s there was a wave, and in the late 80s, early 90s, there was a wave. And then that all these waves reflect, as would have been in the period you looked at, they reflect what the sociological environment was in Ireland at the time that the people were coming from. So how attitudes of the Irish at various waves may be totally different from the previous wave.
Yes, because obviously there were different circumstances, whether you're trying to go from times of religious persecution to physical survival to, again, moving into more religious persecution, or, you know, thinking of times of the Troubles and when, you know, there was, you know, again, more safety depending on where you were living, especially if you were closer in the northern part of Ireland within Belfast, where there was a lot more people leaving to places like Australia to get out at that time. So
Melanie, if people want to learn a bit more, find out a bit more about you, the Shamrock genealogist, Where should we direct people?
Sure. So you can find my blog at theshamrockgenealogist.com. I'm also a senior genealogist at American Ancestors, so you can frequently find me giving webinars and other programs on there. And if you're interested on my talk about the Irish settlements in Canada, I did a talk for RootsTech, and that is on the RootsTech.org website. And I think we'll give you a link, Austin, so you can, if you want to put that in the comments or the transcript.
I can do indeed. I have that link.
Great. Yeah, and that's probably the best way to find me. And then on social media, you can largely find me either under different usernames as, the Shamrock Genealogist or Shamrock Gen, GEN. Very easy to find on places like Facebook, X, Blue Sky, Mastodon, and Threads.
And from the point of view of sources, we're in an age where you can actually access an awful lot of sources now that you would not have been able to access previously. So again, part of what you would be able to and that you cover would be directing people to where, if they're doing research, where they might be able to find more information.
Yes, a lot of the different sources are in online databases or in collections on places like FamilySearch, and I have those links available in the handout attached to the webinar.
Fantastic. Melanie, it's been pleasure chatting with you. It's a real pleasure to be there.
Pleasure chatting with you too.
Fascinating, and particularly as say we are celebrating Irish Heritage Month here in Canada, and I want to thank you for taking the time and spending it with us, and wish you a very happy March.
Thank you, and happy St. Patrick's Day as well to you and your followers. And I hope everybody enjoys their Irish Heritage Month and can dig more into their roots.